Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Local author and radio newsman Kevin Killeen has made the most of his childhood growing up in Webster Groves by writing books with that suburban St. Louis setting. In his third book, set there, he gives us yet another look in his latest tale, One of Young Love and Crime. Kevin will join us in a couple of moments, but first, there are well over 20 million veterans in this country, almost 2 million of whom have served in Iraq and Afghanistan. Many vets return to civilian life suffering from physical, psychological, and abuse issues. There are many efforts to help them, and we're talking about some of them in this segment, including veterans drug courts, a local mentoring program, and the Vet Court Technology Clinic. Joining me in studio are Matthew Miller, the Veterans Administration Legal Outreach Coordinator. Kennedy Davis is the director of the Vet Court Technology Clinic and a graduate of the Veterans Drug Court. Wilson Woody Powell is a Veterans Drug Court mentor and chair of the Vet Court Technology Clinic. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Lots to talk about today, and I'll begin, Matt, with you. It seems like there are a lot of moving parts these days when it comes to vets issues. What are some of the most prominent in your mind?
Well, there are a couple that I work with quite frequently. One is crisis intervention teams within the police departments in this area, and that's been a huge important way to intervene with veterans at the point of crisis. But the veterans treatment courts are an extremely valuable piece of the sort of the jurisdictional puzzle that you mentioned. They're an alternative to incarceration, and they involve extensive supervision of people, of the participants on their dockets. While they are able to stay in the community, the participants, and work on recovery and work on treatment programs, the courts supervise that with a group of sort of community assistants, such as people like me.
Are veterans courts a commonplace now?
They're becoming commonplace. So the very first one was started in 2008 in Buffalo, New York. At this point, we're at around 220 around the country, so it's really been an explosion.
Well, this tells us that there's a terrific need out there, that the veterans are coming back. Those who have come back recently and those who have been here for a while have very specific problems, don't they?
There are definitely a plethora of behavioral health needs in particular and some medical needs that sort of tend to contribute to veterans' legal involvement or justice involvement. And these courts are a great way to address that.
Kennedy, let me turn to you and get some sense of what's going on from your perspective.
Well, from my perspective, I'm looking at that these veterans are in need of assistance. And the one that I didn't come across, they have different behavioral problems, and cannot fit into society because of these reasons. And from my experience, I am a graduate of the Veterans Court, and my some of my needs had been addressed that I did not know that I had a problem with. And the Veterans Court kind of set you down and focus you in on your needs, you know, and they look to see what can they provide to help you fit well into society. And my perspective, I was when I started out, I came into the drugs court because they had not evaluated me as being a veteran at the time. And when I was going through the drug court, I was having significant problems, you know, and these were just issues that that had not been addressed from my special needs that I didn't know I had them. But once I got into it, I had been going through a problem with the drug court because I just wasn't performing well. But once I got into the Veterans Court, after they evaluated me being a veteran, I got into the Veterans Court and things changed. They changed for me because of the mentoring program that they had that was assisting me. And from that point, some of my issues were addressed. It's just that I need that mentor, and I had to be the learning that I got had to be I'm trying to find a word for that. I had to be torn apart, so to speak.
And rebuilt?
And rebuilt. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And from that, and I met Mr. Powell, and he was a, I mean, he was, it just was a perfect fit. So
what would the option have been for you had you not had access to this court and the program?
Wow. The option for me is I was facing 15 years in prison. And if I did not finish this program, and it was it looked like when I was in the regular drug court that I was headed to the during the 15 years, and but it was turned around by by Mr. Powell because he gave me some ideals that that maybe can help me and others at the same time.
Well, what do you talk about your involvement, how it came to be, and your impression of what the courts are doing?
Well, I became a mentor about 4 years ago. I encountered a fellow by the name of Bob Murphy at one of the—
Let me interrupt just to establish, you became a mentor. Is that part of the court system? Are you working for the court as a mentor?
I'm working with the court
as
a mentor, and that's a necessary distinction because I am not part of the authority structure, and that's important. So when we're working with the veterans, they can come to us and talk about anything they want to talk about. We, as mentors, we have some access to different resources out in the community, and we can make them available to the people that we're working with. Kennedy is a good case in point, and I'd like to tell you the story of how the clinic began, because it started with another one of our vet court participants, Leroy Hirsch, who had terrible arthritis in his hands.
He used to play for the Rams about 50 years ago too, didn't he?
Not this one.
Not okay.
And Judge Sullivan, who was then Commissioner Sullivan, suggested that maybe he could use a keyboard. And he said, well, talk to the mentors about that. So he talked to me about that, and I went down to the Veterans Peace Office and picked up a computer that they weren't using and gave it to them. And other people saw that, and the conversation got around to, well, wouldn't it be a good idea for us to be able to get conversant with computers and be able to use them and go on the internet and look for jobs and, all that business that you can do with computers. Kennedy was on hand at that point. He was about to graduate, and he grabbed a hold of that idea with both hands and feet and his brain. He's got a marvelous brain. And we made it happen. A fellow named Bob Chryselius with the city helped us out, put me on to Brenda Marr at the Employment Connection. She gave us about 3,000 square feet of space there, and we went to town and started setting things up.
So this is the Veterans Court Technology Clinic that you're
right.
talking about, yet
right.
another outgrowth of all of this.
That's right.
So it's affiliated and associated with the court, but not part.
Exactly.
Not part of it. How important is something like the VC
TC?
To the veteran today?
Well, it's huge. So we talked about some of the treatment needs of the veterans. This is sort of a resource need for veterans to become, I guess you could say, productive or as productive as they can, learn new skills, join the sort of the current society, which is so online oriented nowadays, and it's really important for them to get those other pieces of their puzzles, their personal puzzles in place to continue their recovery.
Of course, one of the needs, Kennedy, one of the needs that these veterans have is employment. As the court, as a technology, a technical clinic, pardon me for the VCTC, I'll refer to it that way, it's a lot easier. Has that been providing jobs? Has it been a pathway to employment?
Well, yes, it has been a pathway to employment because, first of all, we are able to provide the veteran or non-vet. We also service non-vet, but we provide them with the resource to be able to go online. We also teach classes. We run a class from Monday through Friday from 9 to 3. every day. And what we do, we help them build resumes. We help them go online to look for jobs. And actually, we have a lot of, well, not a lot, but about 20% of the veterans that we service have found jobs.
How many veterans do you service?
So far, we have served about 270 since we've been open since May of 2012. Yeah.
And, Woody, you have some numbers, I think.
Quite a few have gotten jobs. I think about 30% of our veterans got jobs. And then some went on to higher education. And Kennedy is an example. He got his BA from Harris Stowe at the time that we started the clinic.
When was that, by the
way?
I graduated from Harris Stowe in May of 2012.
And now he's going for his master's.
And the clinic started when?
In 2012.
Oh, in the same year. Okay.
Yeah, same year.
Right. So he's been a busy guy going for his master's, running the clinic, and trying to raise money.
Yeah. Does this make your job easier, Matt?
Well, absolutely. I mean, like I said, I'm part of the homeless program. My little VJO part is part of the homeless program.
Yet another problem facing many vets.
Oh, huge. So, you know, we see these sort of personal resource problems, deficits all the time. And it's actually required to graduate from the Veterans Treatment Court as a participant that you be either gainfully employed or if somebody's on disability, that they at least be volunteering. So these are parts of the pieces to get that all taken care of.
Who's funding all of this?
Well,
that's always an issue.
Well, who's funding this right now? We have several private investors who...
They're not investors, they're donors.
Well, donors. Oh, right.
Well,
yeah, well,
they're
donors.
They're investing in humans.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And we're kind of scrapping for resources, but we make do, you know, by me using, you know, the resources that we have. I'm in agreement with Jim Kravick down, and he also he provided me with computers at a pretty reasonable price. And when I say reasonable, I mean reasonable. With my budget, he's been pretty well on hand helping us keep computers and be able to give them. We also give away computers to clients that come in and finish our program. We offer them a free laptop, desktop, or tablet after they finish the program. But I also be in hand. I go out to disabled vets' home. I have a few clients that are disabled don't come out that I provide computers with, and I also go to their house and show them how to use it.
How large a staff do you have?
Wow. Not too many. I guess I'm about me and a couple more volunteers. I say about five.
About five.
Yeah. He's got a homeless guy and one that's in the...
I got a couple of homeless people where I had brought them in. They had showed potential of being part of the VCTC, and so I give them an opportunity to learn new skills and also be able to work their skills.
Good for you. I have to take a break now. We'll come back and talk more about veterans issues, particularly with regard to the Veterans Court here in St. Louis. St. Louis County has one as well, right, Jefferson County?
Brand new in both of those locations,
okay.
Yes.
We'll come back and pick up this conversation. We're talking with Matt Miller, who is the Veterans Administrator, Veterans Administration Legal Outreach Coordinator. Kennedy Davis is Director of the Vet Court Technology Clinic, and Woody Powell is a Veterans Drug Court Mentor and Chair of the Vet Court Technology Clinic. Back in just a moment to continue the conversation. If you'd like to be a part of it, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org. If you'd prefer to send a tweet, do that to STL on Air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to continue our conversation with Matt Miller of VA, Kennedy Davis, director of the Vet Court Technology Clinic, and Woody Powell, Veterans Court Drug Mentor and Chair of the Vet Court Technology Clinic. Woody, let me turn to you because you've mentioned mentoring. And I know there's a very significant aspect to keep everything on track for these vets.
Yeah. In this particular court, and I think in some others, but not in all others, the mentors are both veterans and in recovery themselves. So we relate to people on two different levels. But it's almost like a sponsorship relationship. But as I said earlier, we're not part of the authority structure. So everything that is between us is kept confidential.
It's very important, isn't it, to have vets dealing with vets because they understand each other's problems.
And then to carry it on to the clinic, Kennedy has created an atmosphere up there where people can come into a totally non-judgmental atmosphere. And we hold 12-step meetings up there, and we also have a 12-step meeting prior to court every other Friday. And this is a very important part of the recovery of these people.
Where do you find the mentors?
I find them through AA.
I can add that, like Kennedy, some of the Vet Corps graduates have gone on to become mentors, and you know they're some of the ideal mentors because they've been through it.
How closely do the mentors work with the vets? I mean, do they shadow them? Do they report once a week? I mean, how does it work?
Really, it depends on the relationship that the veteran wants, and it usually starts up pretty arm's length. And then it gets better and better as you go along and you become more involved with their lives. Some of them you don't get involved with very much, and some of them don't make it.
Yeah.
And we have to account for that.
Matt, why do so many veterans come back wounded in this way? I mean, so many are substance abuse abusers, that sort of thing, homeless.
So there's probably a lot of answers to that question, and I should say that in our veterans treatment courts, we view these as co-occurring disorders dockets. So most of the vets that are participating have both substance use and mental health concerns going on when they come in the court. And so we're paying attention to and treating all of those things that they present with. You know, certainly veterans that have been deployed into any kind of combat area are going to see and experience a lot of things that most of us thankfully never have to. So that in and of itself is, I think, a big piece of the puzzle. A lot of the veterans that, you know, had challenges, both socioeconomic and psychological and substance use related, before they even joined in the military. Mm-hmm. So, you know, sometimes the stressors of military service add to those problems.
Is this, Kennedy and Woody, is this making sense to you? I mean, is this your experience?
Oh, yes, it is.
Yeah. Very definitely.
Right. You know, I asked that question because we have a caller who wants to make a point, and I think it's an important one to make now. So let's bring in Zach. He's calling from St. Louis. Zach, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I just think it's important. Like yesterday when you prefaced the show, you had said often, you know, veterans come back with issues, and often and recurrently and time again and usually. You know, those words are all synonymous. And while I think, and I don't want to get too far away from the topic, but I think it's important, you know, to say that, you know, while all these things that everybody's talking about, the panel's talking about, I mean, they're outstanding. I back them 100%. I'm great that those things are in place. But I know a lot of people in the St. Louis area that are service members that have been deployed to combat theaters, and they, you know, work for Monsanto. They are school teachers. You know, they're not part of these, you know, and not that any of these individuals that have any issues are, you know, lesser than anyone else. I'm not taking away from anything that's here, but there are a lot of veterans that come back. I think what I'm getting at is when we talk about these kind of things, I think somebody that has not been in the military, you know, just makes an assumption that when an individual enlists into the military, you know, it's implied that they're going to come back broken.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I just think that's important to kind of, you know, talk about.
It's a very important point, Zach, and thank you for making it. And Matt, do we have any sense of percentage of vets who come back who require some sort of help as opposed to those who assimilate very easily?
Well, we know that out of all of the veterans that come to the VA for treatment nationwide, roughly 20% of those veterans are receiving some form of behavioral health treatment, whether that's substance use or mental health.
What was that number again?
About 20%. 20%. Mm-hmm. So that may be a lower number in the entire veteran population around the country, but certainly for the ones that come to see us, we know that.
Woody, what about the falling off the track, if you will? I mean, I'm talking recidivism now. What about your experience with those who just don't make it, mentoring or with mentors or not, who reabuse or return to old ways?
There's not a whole lot I can say about that. You know, you work with a person, you give them of your time and your attention, even your love, and they are just not constituted to receive it, or the addiction is just so powerful that they just can't get past it. And in many cases, that is the case. The addiction is just taken over their lives, and it won't let go, and they can't make the necessary adjustments. Right. They have every opportunity here to do it. They've got the structure of the court itself. They've got the 12-step programs, which are mandatory, and then also those that are not mandatory. We hope that it becomes not mandatory for them and they can carry on and carry on with the 12-step program into, after they're out of the court. Yeah. But some people just don't make it, and we have to accept that.
If I can jump in on that, I would say there is value even for the veterans that don't successfully graduate from the court. There's value in the time that they are on the docket and experience all the connections to the mentors, to treatment, to just the legal system, experiencing the legal system as a group that wants to help rather than punish. That maybe that gets banked away, and 10 years down the line, maybe it clicks. And it's something that is – there's value in that.
When you say graduate from the court – when they do that, is their record wiped clean? They have no further chance of sentence or what have you?
Well, every court is a little bit different. And in the court, for instance, in the city that we all started with, it depends on how the veteran entered the court. Some veterans come in and have to plead guilty first. It depends on the charges. And they will get a significant reduction in the charges. Some veterans come in pre-plea and usually have the opportunity to have those charges dropped.
Yeah. Kennedy, we've been talking about basically abuse issues.
Yes.
It seems to be the dominant theme. But what about the veterans who commit a more serious crime, if you will, a crime where there are victims, an armed robbery, that sort of thing? Are they eligible for this court?
Yes, they are.
And how are they treated? Is it different from the other?
No, they are treated no different than one that just got a minor charge because, like I say, we run a non-judgmental center. I evaluate, and I ask, I had from convicted murderers to just, so to speak, just stealing, so to speak. And we treat them, I just treat them the same because I don't know the situation. I don't ask them questions about it. I just take it for face value, and I watch how they treat me. Mm-hmm. See, I have to take them and put them in an environment where they're whatever they may be, that it's not explosive.
But are we saying, and Woody, maybe you can answer this or whoever can answer it, are we saying that that a veteran who commits an armed robbery can potentially not do any time because he's a veteran?
Yes, I would say so, yeah. Yes.
Keep in mind that a veteran in that situation will have served some jail time just waiting for all of this to pan out. If and when that veteran becomes a participant on the docket. Let me just say this, too. The general concept of treatment courts is intended for nonviolent crimes.
Sure.
However, many courts, certainly the courts we work with here, will consider those on case by case.
Go ahead, Kennedy.
Well, I want to point out one thing. All of my participants are not out of the drug court or the veterans court. I also have some that recently just been released or in the halfway house. They hear about my program. They come to the program. They tell me about their problems and everything, and I just take them through the program, and they started, the program we run I try to get where they open up to everyone, just, you know, take them resentful feelings and just lay them out on the table and just communicate, you know. So.
But once they've gone through the process, I mean, they have been before the court, and they go through the process and they graduate, which is the term you use, do they have a record?
They may have a record of an offense that's probably a much lesser charge than what they came in with.
Well, what about getting jobs after that if they've got that record? You know, that little box that has to be checked.
That can be a problem, especially if it was a felony.
Yeah. This is probably a good time to point out that the VA and other resources are sometimes able to help veterans with a criminal record help find jobs with employers who are, especially if they've been through a treatment court successfully, that really speaks a lot to an employer who's listening.
It does.
There has to be a lot of collaboration. I'm looking at my notes here. And the VCTC team consists of probation and parole, a court commissioner, the prosecuting attorney, a representative from the public defender's office, a treatment liaison, representative from the VA, and a mentor. That's a lot of people getting involved.
It's a large group of people, and that's another thing that I think the veterans as participants see when they come in is look at this huge group of people, some of whom are pretty important, like Woody, that are coming in to help us.
Now, don't sell Kennedy short. I'm going to have to leave it there, gentlemen, unless you have a final thought you'd like to make before we move on. I'll start with you, Woody.
Well, we can always use money, and you can go to our website, the vetcourtcomputerclinic.org. That's vetcourtcomputerclinic.org, and you can make a donation.
All right. We'll put a link to that website on ours so people who don't have a pen in their hands can come to stlpublicradio.org and find that there.
Thank you.
How about you, Kennedy? A final thought?
Yes, I just want to say that I take this opportunity to say that the Veterans Court Technology Clinic is helpful in the treatment as part of the treatment from the Veterans Court.
Well, there are more than 200 men and some women, I suppose, who are grateful for having gone through that.
Yes.
Matt, a final thought?
Final thought, veterans treatment courts save money and result in better outcomes, both legally in terms of recidivism and in terms of treatment outcomes.
That's expensive to put someone in a jail or a prison these days,
very,
isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I want to thank you all. Matthew Miller, thank you so much for being with us. From the Veterans Administration, Kennedy Davis and Woody Powell of the Vet Court Technology Clinic, thank you so very
and
much.
Thank you,
You're
sir.
Welcome.
Good luck with continued success with the program.
Thank
Coming
you,
up, Kevin Colleen. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7. KWMU.